part of a lot of my work is increasing the awareness that we have things to help. And so you can bring it up because we have something that can give you relief. That ownership of your body, of being just yours and being your own responsibility and thereby you having agency over your body, that is not reinforced so much. The shift is something that has to be combated on a personal level, on a community level, where parents and people who have power say, actually, we're going to do better than what the standard is according to this government leader or whatever.
Welcome to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast, where we meet the world's top experts to explore the secrets of health, mindset, longevity, and so much more. Are you ready to take charge of your existence and biohack your life? This show is for you. Please keep in mind, we're not dispensing medical advice and are not responsible for any outcomes you may experience from implementing the tactics lying herein. So friends, are you ready to join me? Let's do this. Welcome back to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. Oh my goodness, friends, words cannot describe how much I genuinely enjoyed this conversation today with Dr. Charis Chambers. She is the chief medical officer of the Clue app and widely known as the period doctor on social media. I cannot recommend the Clue app enough when it comes to tracking and truly understanding your cycle to best empower you for your goals. And like we talk about in today's show, people have a lot of concerns about data privacy. One of the benefits of the Clue app is it is based in Berlin and is behind a paywall, meaning they do not sell your data. That said, you can get a year for free, which is so amazing. For that, just log into the Clue app and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon. That will get you 12 months completely free. Or you can go to melanieavalon.com/clueapp and that will auto-direct you to the login and apply the coupon code. We talk about so many incredible things in today's episode. Topics like the shame and embarrassment surrounding the menstrual cycle in our culture and why changing that starts with parents. We talk about myths when it comes to our periods, i.e. do girls actually sync up when they live together? We talk about what's normal when it comes to periods, including pain with periods, how ovulation can change throughout your life cycle, how your period relates to longevity, whether or not you should freeze your eggs, stigmas when it comes to birth control, which may be helpful for other things beyond birth control, and so much more. In particular, I really love the empowerment that Dr. Chambers is doing for so many women, especially of different socioeconomic statuses and races. And we have some really good conversations about the bias paradigms rampant in education when it comes to creating a healthy relationship with our menstrual cycles. And something I really, really loved, I love that we talk about whether or not you should be syncing to your cycle. I know I've had a lot of guests on the show who talk about the benefits of adjusting your diet, your lifestyle to the different phases of your cycle, but what if you don't want to do that? We talk about that. The show notes for today's episode will be at melanieavalon.com/clue. Those show notes will have a full transcript as well as links to everything that we talked about, so definitely check that out. I can't wait to hear what you guys think. Definitely let me know in my Facebook group, IF Biohackers, Intermittent Fasting plus Real Foods plus Life. Comment something you learned or something that resonated with you on the pinned post to enter to win something that I love. And then check out my Instagram, find the Friday announcement post, and again, comment there to enter to win something that I love. Hi friends, did you know that one of our largest sources of toxic exposure each and every day is through our skincare and makeup? It is so frightening the effects these compounds can have on our health. So we put these products on to help us look better, and yet they actually can be aging us, contributing to health issues, fertility issues, thyroid issues, mood issues, and ready for something potentially even more shocking? A lot of these endocrine disruptors are actually obesogens, meaning they cause your body to gain weight and make it harder to lose weight. That's right, your skincare and makeup may be hindering your weight loss goals. Europe has banned thousands of these compounds, and the US has banned around a dozen. There's even a loophole from the 1960s that allows companies to put whatever they want in their products, and they don't even have to tell you. That's why I am overwhelmingly careful about the skincare and makeup that I use. But here's the thing, it can be hard to find skincare and makeup that is non-toxic and actually works. And then on top of that, that actually has all the products you need. I have found two companies, I am obsessed with their standards and use them every single day of my life and cannot recommend them enough. That's Counter, formerly known as Beauty Counter, and Crunchy. Both of these companies have incredible standards when it comes to what they put in their products. You can truly feel good about using them, and they actually work. For Counter products, go to melanieavalon.com/counter. And for Crunchy products, go to crunchy.com. That's crunchy.com/melanieavalon. New Crunchy customers can use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 to get 10% off. You'll also receive something special from me after your first order. I also highly recommend joining both of their loyalty programs. It's completely free to join, and with every purchase, you'll earn credit as well as other fun goodies. For all the latest updates, new products, specials, deals, and fun things for me, because yes, I love giving things away, get on my email list. That's at melanieavalon.com/cleanbeauty. You can also get text updates when you text skincare to 877-861-8318. That's skincare to 877-861-8318. So again, to shop with me and get a free gift from me after your first order, go to melanieavalon.com/counter and also crunchy.com/melanieavalon. And new customers, use the coupon code ADVOCATE10 at Crunchy to get 10% off site-wide. And again, definitely join their free loyalty programs to earn credit on every order. Hey friends, exciting news. My Avalon X Spirulina is back in stock and now at a reduced price. Plus, you get free shipping, and my coupon code works on top of that sale price. Spirulina is honestly one of the most nutrient-dense things that you can put in your body in a whole foods, easy to eat form. It's a blue-green algae, which is a complete vegan protein packed with an incredible array of nutrients. We are talking 100% of your daily hard-to-get vitamin K, 625% of vitamin B12, over 1,000% of vitamin A, 86% of chromium, 27% of vitamin B2, plus so much more, including iron, GLA, the powerful antioxidant superoxide dismutase, and even glutathione. In fact, spirulina is so uniquely nutritious that it was actually studied by NASA to support the astronauts. I searched high and low to find the very best spirulina out there. Ours comes from a wonderful, sustainable, clean, environmentally friendly production facility in Hawaii. Not Thailand, Hawaii. And then on top of that, we did our own third-party testing for over 70 pesticides, heavy metals, toxins, all the things. This is the cleanest spirulina out there. And with spirulina, you can simplify your supplement routine and support your nutrition in one easy step. The tablets are super versatile. You can swallow them whole, blend them into smoothies, crush them up, or honestly, just eat them like I do. And again, we were out of stock, but now Avalon X Spirulina is finally back in stock at a reduced price, and my coupon code MelanieAvalon works on top of that too. Plus, you get free shipping. Just go to avalonx.us/spirulina and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon to get 10% off our new reduced price plus free shipping. That's avalonx.us/spirulina with the coupon code MelanieAvalon. All right, I think that's all the things. As a brief reminder, you can get 12 months free of the Clue app. For that, just log into the Clue app and use the coupon code MelanieAvalon. You can also go to melanieavalon.com/clue app, and that will auto-direct you to a link that will help you log in and apply that discount code. And now, without further ado, please enjoy this fabulous conversation with Dr. Charis Chambers. Hi friends, welcome back to the show. I am so incredibly excited about the conversation I am about to have. It is on a topic that we have talked quite a bit about on the show, and that is women's reproductive health, sexual health, menstrual health. And all of the guests that I found on the show to talk about this have usually been like authors and researchers. I have not had somebody involved specifically in the app world when it comes to this. So you guys might have heard of the Clue app. It's actually an app that helps you track your menstrual cycle for all the things, for your health and wellness, for fertility, whatever, however you want to optimize and supercharge your life with your menstrual cycle. That's where the Clue app comes in. So when the opportunity was presented to me to have Dr. Chambers on the show, Dr. Charis Chambers, who is Clue's chief medical officer, I was an immediate yes. She is a board certified certified OBGYN and a specialty certified pediatric and adolescent gynecologist. She's really big on social media. She's known as the Period Doctor. So you can find her on Instagram, TikTok, all the things. And I am just smiling even more because we are both living in Atlanta, Georgia, which is awesome. So we're neighbors. So we're going to have to actually hang out sometime. I'm just saying that now. So I have so many questions from you guys, questions from myself, but just to start things off, Dr. Charis Chambers, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm beyond excited to talk about this because it is my favorite topic, as you probably have guessed.
Which actually, that is a fantastic place to start because I'm just, okay, just having flashbacks. I'm from Atlanta now, as you know, but raised in the Bible Belt South. And so it's interesting because I grew up in this microcosm of like a Christian upbringing. And so I don't know how different it would have been, you know, in like a non-religious setting, but I at least know that in my world growing up, there was always like this shame, a little bit of shame and secrecy around like your menstrual cycle, which is, when I was in the shower today, getting ready for this, I was like contemplating that like the entire shower, like where did, like, it's so interesting that shame and secrecy is still pervasive today, you know? So yeah, I'm really curious your thoughts on that and like when it became your favorite thing.
Absolutely. So it's funny because I've been in this work for so long that those topics and that very same thought process that you had in the shower, like it comes up all the time. I'm like, I can't believe that we are still, you know, whispering, can I have a pad? Can I have a tampon? Like it is such a strange thing when you really think about the facts that over half the folks in this world have had or will have a period, right? That we are functional, that this is a normal thing. And we'll say, hey, I've got to go, you know, pee. Other people say that all the time, or I've got to use the bathroom, whatever. But speaking about the natural function of a period is so shrouded in stigma. And so I also grew up in the South. I grew up in a Christian family. And that secrecy was not just something that was specific to my family or community, but it was certainly something that I saw in church, just how women's bodies were regarded and how we were taught to behave and carry ourselves so as to not bring any attention to our periods. Even when I got my very first period, and I actually talk about this in my book, my very first period, my mom talked to me about periods. And one of the rules that she kind of stated was no one should know when you're on your period. I was like, wow. What kind of secret society is this? Like, that seems kind of nuts. How can I hide bleeding? But I'll do the best I can. That was just how we were raised.
It's so, so fascinating. And actually, I was going and getting tampons literally this week, and I was aware of like, even when you like, still for me today, like when I walk in the tampon aisle, it's like, oh, you know, like that aisle, like don't let people see you going, which is just so, so crazy. So, okay. So did you have, what was your experience with your cycle growing up? Did you have a quote normal cycle? And I'm sure we need to like define what that even means.
I remember my first cycle and I started at like the normal age. I was 13, but I thought it was profoundly late because it just seemed like everyone had their periods already, which again speaks to how normal is conflated with abnormal depending on who you're around. So my very first period was during the summer. We were about to go swimming and I loved swimming so much at that time. And so for my very first period, I used a tampon. And I didn't realize at the time how progressive my mother must have been, you know, to walk me through that, but it was totally fine. And there weren't a lot of taboos around that. But the general guidance of how to care for myself, which was like, hey, never sleep in tampons. Make sure that you put all your stuff away in a trash bag and then wrap that in a special trash bag and put that in the trash in the garage so your dad and brother don't see it type of thoughts. That was my guidance. But I never really had trouble with my period. It was very straightforward, about 5 days or so, every 28 days or so. And so when we think about a normal cycle length, it's roughly 7 days or less. We really don't want you to exceed 7 days of heavier bleeding. And it typically occurs for our adolescents, we say every 21 to 45 days. But for adult women, we typically say closer to like every 21 to 35-ish days. And so it was normal for me, but I watched my sisters not have particularly normal cycles. Like my older sister would say, you don't feel like you're going to pass out in the shower when you're on your period? I was like, no, that sounds concerning. You know, my younger sister would be like, man, you're not balled up in pain when you're on your period? I was like, no. And so I began to realize just in my home that periods have range, that my period is not everyone's period. That normal to abnormal type of story began to develop. I was like, hey, there's more here than what people let on.
And how common, so like the experience with your siblings, you know, this like pain, and I'm getting all the memories. I remember when I was like going to Florida with one of my friends and she couldn't even like leave. We couldn't even go out because she was in so much pain. And I was just, I didn't have that experience of the pain or anything like that. How common is that where people are, you know, having really unpleasant symptoms with their menstrual cycle?
So period pain, which we also call dysmenorrhea, it's something that's reported in up to 90% of people with periods. So there's some sort of discomfort that people are going to experience at some point with their period. Severe pain, however, is something that's a little bit harder to quantify in the sense of it being more of a spectrum of sorts. But when we think about a category, for example, where it's typically characterized by severe pain, like endometriosis, that's going to be 1 in 10. And so you can expect about, you know, at least 10%, maybe up to a quarter of people to have pain that at least requires meaningful treatment and meaningfully affects their day-to-day life.
Wow. Okay. And do you think historically, like, do you think the issues with pain and things like that are a symptom of our modern lifestyle? Like, do you think hunter-gatherers, when they had periods, like how much do you think periods have changed from like hunter-gatherer days?
You know, and I think that's such an interesting point because it's brought up on social media all the time. There's videos that say, you know, periods were never meant to hurt. I'm like, oh, how can you know that? Right. But
were you there?
Right. There is the understanding of how things like stress and inflammation and endocrine disrupting chemicals and all these other things negatively affect our periods, how obesity and our diets have caused our periods to start earlier and the onset of puberty to begin earlier. And so it's natural to assume that maybe, yes, there would have been less inflammation and then a later onset of periods related to diet, the lower levels of obesity, and all of those things. Not to suggest that our hunter-gatherer days or whatever were like peak health days. I think the life expectancy was like, you know, the third or fourth decade. And so it's like, do we want to model ourselves after that necessarily? But there is some consideration to shifting of periods as it relates to what we are doing in modern times. Processed foods, obesity, varieties of other chronic conditions and how they affect our periods. But it's not enough where I could say that before this, you know, there was no such thing as period pain. I do think it's very likely that it was never acknowledged and that it wasn't acknowledged because there wasn't an opportunity to treat it. And it's very silly to dwell on something when you don't believe it can be changed. And so when you think about how people were historically, they may have just thought that it was life. And so you don't complain necessarily about the things you don't change. You just adapt to them. Part of a lot of my work is increasing the awareness that we have things to help. And so you can bring it up because we have something that can give you relief.
Gotcha. Okay. I love that perspective so much. So here's a question that's kind of the opposite of the hunter-gatherer question. It's something I think about this a lot. So I've had a lot of guests on the show like Dr. Mindy Peltz and Jolene Brighton and a lot of people who talk about living your life according to your cycle. So like in the different phases, you know, how do you eat? How do you exercise? So here's my question coming from me. So I don't know what part of me it is that like feels this, but I guess I identify as like the strong, independent woman. I kind of feel like I'm like a man inside in some ways. And so for me, I'm like, I don't want to have to adjust my life according to my cycle. And I'm haunted and torn by this idea of like, on the one hand, that seems super intuitive and like be in touch with your body and probably the most healthy thing and what I quote should be, you know, wanting to feel. And then how I actually feel, which is like, I don't want my cycle to even be a thing ever because yeah.
Exactly. And I love that you bring that up, honestly, Melanie, because the the storylines around cycle syncing and what that looks like to change your diet and your workout and even how you plan your social life around your cycle assumes a variety of things. It assumes you have the power to change these things, right? It assumes that you're on like no hormonal medication to meaningfully change your cycle so that you are having those rises and falls that are expected of each of the phases of the menstrual cycle. It assumes a lot of things that are not a reality for the modern woman like yourself or even myself who prefers to be able to plan my family how I want to. And so I've got an IUD that actually prevents me from having regular bleeding, but I still can track my cycle and understand different nuances. I don't need that to be how I live my entire life. I don't need to check it every day and be like, okay, I'm mid-luteal phase. This is what I can do today. For some people, that's really empowering. For other people, that's very daunting. It's like another thing on my list of things I have to do because of this body, because I have a uterus and ovaries. This is another thing I have to consider. And so I want to make sure that when we are talking about reproductive health opportunities and ways to approach reproductive health, we appropriately leave the range and duality and nuance that is required to consider all of the ways people navigate life. And a lot of these things, as relates to like cycle syncing, they really come from a place of profound privilege, where you have the privilege of modifying your life and your exercise and your diet and all of those things, which would suggest access and resources that are not really all that accessible to many people globally. So I want to make sure we call it what it is. It's lovely, but for me to state it as a requirement for optimal health is a disservice to so many people who do not have the privilege that others do.
Okay, I'm just loving this conversation so much. This is incredible, especially because I think, yeah, I haven't really had a nuanced conversation about it like this. And I remember I was having a conversation offline with somebody who will not be named. I was expressing these same thoughts, what I just said about how, you know, I don't need my period and I just want to be independent. And then the person told me that's because I was ingrained in like the patriarchy. And I was like, I don't think it's the patriarchy. I think I just don't want, I don't like dealing with my menstrual cycle.
What's remarkable is that the patriarchy is actually one in which they tell you exactly what women can and should do and what men can and should do. And so it is actually a perpetuation of the patriarchy to tell someone like you, who is a full thinking and well-rounded individual who's decided, I actually don't want this by virtue of my understanding of my life, and to say, actually, you just don't know that you don't want it. That is patriarchal.
This is such a great conversation. Yeah. And I just remember, I can feel the visceral excitement feeling, which this is a quick question as well. But I remember, because when I first got my cycle, I started with pads. And then I remember when I first like actually got a tampon in, because goodness knows that was really scary and difficult the first time, which by the way, okay, another tangent, I promise I'll come back to all these things. You mentioned a book and I'm like having a minor freak out because I always read the books. Is this a book that's not out yet?
It's not out yet. I'm so sorry. And that I was like, I shouldn't have even said that, but yes, it's not out yet.
When does it come out? I'm just like obsessive with like reading the people's books. So I will read it and hopefully we can like have you back on. When does it come out?
It comes out May 19th, and it's called The Period and Puberty Parenting Revolution. And I just love alliteration probably too much. But the idea is that we are in a very interesting time in which reproductive health education is not being championed like it should be. It's actually kind of regressing. And there's a very intentional change on what reproductive health access looks like, and the narratives that are leading these conversations are not grounded in science or evidence. And I genuinely believe the earlier we educate folks who are going to be navigating life with periods, the better we are for future generations. And the first educators of those people tend to be parents. And while the book is a parenting book, it is for anyone who meaningfully impacts or influences people with periods to change the way we consider things, to unlearn stigma and shame, and to approach these topics with a confidence and clarity that comes from medical accuracy that's partnered with compassion. I talk about tampons. I talk about period products. I talk about all of these things that I've always wanted to talk about with all of my patients, but never had enough time, because there is so much nuance in this space, and there's so much guilt, and there's so much of what you should be doing or shouldn't be doing. But I don't want to tell parents what values to have. I want to give them the tools to raise their kids and to rear them with values that their kids can carry as unique and free-thinking people. And so it's a very cool thing that I'm very excited about. But I did talk about my first period in my book. And so the process of writing that book had me reliving the moment of my first period and everything that came with it. So that's where my mind went when you asked me.
Oh my goodness. No, this is incredible. And yeah, I'm going back to all my moments of my first, which I don't even know if I remember like the very, very first period, but I do remember the first time transitioning to the tampons, like I was saying, and a few things. One, how overwhelmingly awkward and embarrassed I was getting my mom to help me like get a tampon in. Like still, I shudder with like that memory, which it shouldn't be that way. So I'm so happy that you're, like, I don't like the word should, but I would like it not to be that way. And I'm happy that you're writing this book because I think that's just so incredible because my memory is my mom being like, and I love my mom. So this is like nothing negative about her, but it's just society. I remember her being like, she came to me and she was like, we can have a talk or you can read a book or you can watch a movie. And I was like, I want to read a book. So she like gave me a book and then I didn't really like talk to her about it, you know? So this is great that you're opening that dialogue and educating. So last thing I'll say is, interestingly, putting a tampon in for the first time was very painful and at the same time, so freeing. That was the moment I was like, oh, I don't have to like be dealing with pads all the time and everything. That's when I think I first felt the idea of like feeling free from my period. I actually, though, still like even putting in a tampon now still is like painful for me, actually. And I don't know if that's, but I've just said to myself, that's normal. So I'm wondering how common it is for people to just like write off things as normal, like we were talking about.
Far too common. So to your point about like tampon insertion, one of my most popular videos, I mean, it has millions of views on YouTube, is a like minute and 30 second tampon insertion tutorial video. Using a vulva puppet that I purchased from Etsy that is like anatomically correct. And I freaking love it. And so many people comment on a daily basis. And this is like a few years old. Thank you so much. I got one in. Oh my gosh. Like, and the notes are just beautiful. I also got a message from a mom on Instagram that said, hey, I've got, you know, a preteen dancer who really wants to wear a tampon because the pads are too bulky for her uniform. But I was never taught to wear a tampon. I'm 40 and I don't know how to wear a tampon. And my child is asking me, can you help me? And so I sent her my video and she was like, oh my goodness, this was so helpful. So there is, you should have been proud of yourself for figuring that out because there's people today who have had babies who still don't know how to insert a tampon, which is mind blowing. It is mind blowing how we normalize this lack of agency around our bodies, which is a byproduct of the patriarchy because it suggests and we have been taught that our bodies aren't really ours to begin with. And so we don't feel the need to have that ownership and understanding of it to manage it that way. You know, we belong to our parents at one point and then we're handed off to our husbands. And, you know, so that ownership of your body of being just yours and being your own responsibility and thereby you having agency over your body, that is not reinforced so much. Especially in certain, you know, settings and communities. I find tampon use very empowering, but many communities mislabel it as inappropriate. Or I had someone who was like 26 before she used a tampon because her grandmother said that tampons were, end quote, for whores. That tampons, a period product that is meant to help you manage your period, can be equated to some sexual promiscuity and flawed character. Like what? That is, it's so ingrained. But anyway, that was quite the tangent. But no, in theory, tampon insertion should not be painful. In my practice, when there is someone says, man, I'm really having trouble inserting a tampon or can't get one in, or it's really painful. What I typically do is an exam, looking at their bottom to just make sure that there isn't some extra tissue around the hymenal opening. That's one of the most common causes of it. The other common cause is that we just haven't quite mastered the angle of insertion. And sometimes there's difficulty as it relates to the way the applicator is shaped. You know, some people insert tampons with cardboard applicators and those have much rougher edges. And so there's a lot of modification that can be done to improve tampon insertion experience. But yes, most of the time when someone says they have some pain with tampon insertion, I'm like, hey, let's just make sure everything is okay down there.
Hi, friends. I have very exciting news. So I know you guys already know and love Element and understand the importance of electrolytes for hydration, energy, focus, supporting your fasting, your workouts, all the things. Guess what? Element has a product that goes beyond electrolytes. What is it? Well, so I am very pro the benefits of caffeine. I love the cognitive benefits, the longevity benefits. And that said, I am a slow caffeine metabolizer, so I don't actually take in lots of caffeine. I've also learned that the form, dose, and balance of caffeine makes a huge difference in how you actually feel. That's why I am so excited that Element has launched a brand new lemonade iced tea. It's refreshing, delicious, lightly caffeinated, perfect for summer, and what I really love is the science behind it. So instead of relying on massive amounts of isolated synthetic caffeine like so many energy drinks out there do, Element Lemonade Iced Tea uses a full black tea extract, so alongside the caffeine, you naturally get compounds like L-theanine and polyphenols. The L-theanine actually helps smooth out the stimulant effect for a calmer, steadier energy experience with less spikes and crashes, while the polyphenols provide antioxidant support as well. And you guys know I am all about the antioxidants. And the incredible team at Element, including my personal hero, Rob Wolf, conducted a meticulous amount of research to find the perfect amount of caffeine, which is the sweet spot for sustained focus and energy without feeling overstimulated or wrecking your sleep later. That is exactly 50 milligrams of caffeine. On top of that, they knew that caffeine can increase your need for critical minerals like sodium, potassium, and magnesium, so that's why Element Lemonade Iced Tea pairs the perfect amount of caffeine with a meaningful dose of electrolytes to support optimal hydration and performance. And of course, Element Lemonade Iced Tea is completely free of sugar, artificial colors, and all the other stuff that you do not want that are so commonly found in caffeinated drinks today. It's built on the same science-backed electrolyte formula that Element is known for, with sodium, potassium, and magnesium in ratios designed to support hydration and energy production. The result? You get your perfect pack of portable, easy-to-make lemonade iced tea that provides steady, clean energy that tastes delicious and actually feels good. As you guys know, Element is trusted by neuroscientists, functional medicine practitioners, professional athletes, including the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, and they're even used by Navy SEALs and the Marines. So are you ready to up your drink level with the ultimate lemonade iced tea? You can get it. And when you get it, get a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon. That's right, a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase at drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon. Find your favorite flavor or share it with a friend. And by the way, Element has an amazing no questions asked refund policy, so you can try it completely risk-free. If for any reason you're not satisfied, they will give you your money back. Again, go to drinklmnt.com/Melanie Avalon for a free 8-count sample pack of Element's most popular drink mix flavors with any purchase, including their new lemonade iced tea.
It's interesting because logically, because like I said, every time I put one in, and I don't have like a heavy flow, so it'll be light, it'll be like a small tampon, but I will still get pain from it, even though I have literally done like, you know, the dilator exercises that you order where you like work your way up. I have done dilators. So I'm like, I know that I can like get up to this size, but why is a small little tampon still hurting?
There's so many reasons. There can be structural reasons. And then there's just nerve issues that can happen depending on lived experiences, prior injuries. For a lot of folks that have kind of that type of pain, especially for like a light or regular tampon, what we also recommend is like pelvic floor physical therapy. And I don't think enough people know about that. But it's not just for postpartum. It's for anyone who have pelvic muscles that might be a little tight or might have some sort of memory of any type of event that makes them kind of over-respond or over-tighten or have an exaggerated pain response to things that possibly would not cause that amount of pain in a typical setting.
Awesome. I definitely need to look into this. And actually that sparked a memory because I do M-Sculpt, which is like muscle stimulation for your muscles. And the place I went, they actually had, it wasn't M-Sculpt, but it was a similar contraction machine for the muscles, for like your pelvic muscles, I think. Do you know what I'm talking about? You like sit on it. I'm just curious if you like it or not. It was like I only tried it once, but I was like, this is interesting.
I haven't done it personally. And from what I understand, it's not a for everyone type of thing. In certain cases, without adequate evaluation, like a thorough evaluation, these things, even things as simple as like Kegel exercises, so right, tightening that pelvic floor, can worsen some pelvic floor dysfunction depending on the type. And so I do recommend that people get, you know, adequate evaluation by a qualified healthcare provider to make sure that some of these, you know, fun, innovative things are not actually worsening underlying conditions depending on their history and their needs.
Okay, awesome. So I just have to ask, and I'm sure I'll learn all about this when I read your book, but you said the education is actually regressing now, like in society. And so why and how?
So it's more so the push behind education. There's been a lot of policies to actually limit education due to a desire to control narratives around gender and sexuality, depending on age. And so in states like Texas or even Florida, there have been changes to sexual education laws for public schools saying, hey, we're actually not going to talk about that until sixth grade. Well, most people actually start their periods around 11 or 12. And by sixth grade, you enter at the age of 12, you leave around 13 roughly, you're going to be missing quite a bit of people. And those people tend to be Black and brown. And so to just decide arbitrarily that this is the age that's worthy of discussion and that this group of people doesn't get to talk about it, like they just don't get any guidance until they're in it, is really unfair and inappropriate. And almost all of our comprehensive sex education guidance and research tells us that the earlier we talk about it, the better. You just need to make it age appropriate. But if there's some sort of agenda that says, actually, we want to make sure that we are promoting only like a heteronormative view of things, then the more we talk about gender differences and periods and even those things, there's an opportunity for conversations and questions and appropriate critical thinking that would challenge that narrative. And so there have been policies put in place to make that actually illegal, to mention certain words in classrooms where sex ed used to be. And so that's a real problem. The shift is something that has to be combated on a personal level and a community level, where parents and people who have power or influence on folks with periods say, actually, we're going to do better than what the standard is according to this government leader or whatever.
Wow. Okay. That's fascinating. And this is a very like specific question, but I'm just curious. So I'm again having this like the conversation of flashbacks. I guess what did they call it? I guess health. What did they call it?
Health class, sex ed. There were so many things.
Yeah, I guess we first had it in fifth grade, at my school.
Mine was seventh.
Seventh grade. Oh wow. Yeah, we first had like they would separate us, and yeah, I have a memory in fifth grade, and we would. There was some sort of like talk situation. I don't think it was a class, but it wasn't like an ongoing class, but there was definitely like a talking that happened. And then in middle school, yeah, health class was actually, we didn't have health class until high school.
Right. I had actual health in high school that was kind of a joke, but also that.
Yeah, we didn't have health class. And that's when I learned, are you ready? Do you want to know what I learned? That's when I learned that condoms do not protect you from STDs. So don't use condoms, because basically literally that's what they told us, because the messaging was they didn't want us having sex because it was a religious school. So they literally told us condoms don't like protect you. And so I just remember like thinking that doesn't make much sense. So the sperm can't get through, but the STDs.
That's the problem when information is filtered through bias, right? Like it's always going to be flawed because there's always going to be this ulterior motive. And that's one of the things that creates the greatest issues in sexual health, especially for young people. Abstinence only sex ed is profoundly ineffective. And there's, I mean, just a laundry list of research articles that prove that. It actually has a greater risk of teen pregnancy than comprehensive sex education, because it's not good enough to say, don't have sex. Like it's just not good enough. It's not realistic. 50% of graduating seniors have had sex. Saying that isn't enough. You need to tell people what to do when they're in these situations. What does consent look like? How do I model it? What is safe? And so saying that the condoms do not protect against STDs is obviously profoundly incorrect. It is not 100% protective against STDs, because nothing is other than abstinence. And that's a true statement, but we have to deal in reality, not in ideology.
Yes, it's so true. It's one of, like, I actually, all of this aside, I really love my upbringing. Like, I'm so grateful for everything and where I am. So this is just one of, if I ever were to have children, this is like one of the things I would change is how I that's what I've said. Like, honestly, like one of the few things I would change is how I would talk to my kids about sexual health and wellness. Like, and it's very passionate about this. So thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. You're like writing the book that is so needed. So just really random question. So the health class, you know, that we both had, I'm presuming yours, mine was separated by like male and female. I would assume that, you know, in the dream world, there's zero shame about any of this and we can just talk about it and there's not this whole stigma. In the meantime, we're not there now. So is it beneficial with these classes that they're still separated by biological male and female, or should they be co-ed?
I think it's a problem because in the world that we are living in, the people that are experiencing periods are experiencing it in a co-ed world. And so it's not really protecting anyone necessarily by separating them. I do think that there is probably greater comfort in more intimate discussions in a group of people that experience periods. But to just educate on what periods are, that education needs to be across the board. That needs to be something that is given to folks regardless of whether they bleed or not. Because these people need to know how to treat people who bleed. They need to know to not make fun of the girl who has a period stain on her pants because she can't control that. And so help her instead of making fun, you know? And so the education is necessary. One-on-one guidance, that absolutely needs to be happening more privately. But to educate a group does not require separation. Moreover, there is a lot of gender fluidity in our younger ages where if you were to say girls and boys over here, there's someone that's like, well, I don't really fit in either. And we're not going to check their chromosomes. We are not going to check their internal anatomy or their genitalia because that's wildly inappropriate and traumatizing. And gender in and of itself is so, so complex. I was watching a video of a young woman who was telling the story of how she realized she was born without a vagina. It was just a very interesting story, but she had something called androgen insensitivity syndrome. And it is something where a baby is born with XY chromosomes, but their body is not able to process testosterone. And so they cannot form the phallic structures of the male genitalia. And so they essentially form as female. And so they live phenotypically as female. And that's just what their body does. But they have XY chromosomes. And this is not a new discovery. There are many people who live with this in this world, but where does that person go? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, oh, we're doing this based on, like, what do you mean? And so instead of having someone to declare their allegiance to this black and white land of gender that actually is self-inflicted and not even real, maybe just talk to everyone about periods, because we live in a world where periods are everywhere. And people are managing periods everywhere we go. And if we are not the ones having them, we need to at least know how to be decent people who can support them.
Wow. Yes. Amazing. And that's really, really fascinating. Okay. So when did you start working for Clue?
So I started in September.
Okay. So recently. Congrats. So probably right when we connected then.
Yeah. But in 2016, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists rated Clue as the best period tracking app. And I was in residency at that time. I was in my training. And from 2014 to 2018, I remember being like, let me read about this Clue app. And I loved everything they were doing. I loved how they were focused on privacy and education and empowerment and body literacy and all of those things. So I've always, in my heart of hearts, had this like superlative for Clue that I never shared. And like this like internal hierarchy of menstrual tracking apps where I was like, Clue is like the gold standard. So when this opportunity came about, I was just blown away. I was like, this aligns so perfectly with like my whole personality that I cannot pass this up. Like, please, please let this, you know, happen. And so it has been a joy. It's always a joy to work in your lane of talents and passions, but it is especially a joy to work in an organization where that integrity and that mission is so clear and so consistent across all levels of leadership. And the passion is just felt. You can tell that people aren't there just for the purpose of having a job. It's because they get to do really, really cool work. And that's my favorite part.
This is so amazing. So to that point, who should be tracking their cycle and how early should we start?
Oh man, this is such a great question because I get to see the earliest people with their periods, right? Like people come to me because they started their period last month. And one of the first things I talk to them about is tracking their cycle. So for too long, we have told people with periods that their desire to know about their bodies must be because they have some other goal, oftentimes to conceive. And it has been normalized for women to only be informed about their bodies if their purpose is to have a child, because that's when society can agree that that's a worthwhile endeavor. I think that people with periods of all ages, regardless of what their desire is for future fertility, deserve to understand their bodies and manage their life in a way that supports their dreams and not have a period that limits that. So whatever, as you mentioned, you're like, some days I'd rather not be a part of it at all. I don't want a cycle sync. You know, I think that everyone should be able to live that way. So to answer your question, everyone should be tracking their cycle. Everyone should be tracking it. As soon as you start to bleed, you should be tracking it because it is giving you insight and information. And as a doctor, as someone who cares for these people, it is one of the first things I ask. If they come to me and say, my period's irregular. Irregular doesn't mean a lot without the data. So I say, well, what does that mean? Does that mean you bleed for too long? Does that mean you bleed too often? Does that mean you bleed too heavily? What does that mean? And so the better you can describe it, the better I can help you. And the better you can identify when you need help. So anyone who has a period, anyone who has a cycle, as in functioning ovaries, in my opinion, should be tracking that cycle. If not for the purposes of optimizing their daily life and cycle syncing, for the purposes of managing and understanding and advocating for their health.
Okay, this is so exciting because, so like I said, I asked for some listener questions and we got some questions from Amy and she had two. And I'm actually going to start with her second one because it's kind of already answered. She said, is anyone advocating for more comprehensive education on the benefits of cycle tracking for young teens? I believe that teaching young people about this could eliminate some of the mystery surrounding womanhood. So yes, there is. And that would be our guest today.
Yes, and Clue, as an organization, we're actually planning something really, really interesting for Q2 around menstrual education, especially for this group, just because it is a global imperative at this point to educate the youngest folks. And what I actually just say often is when we educate our youngest menstruators, our teens, to better understand their bodies, they'll better understand their bodies in their 30s. They'll better understand their bodies when they are trying to conceive. They may better understand pregnancy and postpartum and the hormonal changes and body changes that occur there because they've been given the permission and agency and resources to understand their bodies from the very beginning. So it starts to model how you navigate your reproductive life and the changes that are happening physiologically as you age and as you mature. And I think that modeling needs to happen as young as possible.
Yeah, this is so great. And so her first question was, and you don't have to necessarily speak directly to what she mentions, but she says, how does the Clue app differ from the Natural Cycles app? Wondering if it would be worth it to switch. So maybe just in general, how does Clue differentiate itself? Like you mentioned the award it got, how does it differentiate from other cycle tracking apps?
Yeah. So one of my favorite things about Clue is that it is women-led. So women-led to me matters. I think it says a lot about the origin story and just some of the ways in which leadership is valued and the people are valued who hold these leadership roles. The data privacy of Clue far exceeds a lot of the standards of some of the other apps. That data privacy lends itself to how user information is used and processed and what it looks like to share that information for financial gain, which is what a lot of other apps may do and why they are free and free in like air quotes, because you pay with your information. And a lot of people don't realize that, especially in this current time of a fear of increased fertility information surveillance. It is really important to have data privacy and protection that's real. And so because Clue is based in Berlin, it is not subjected to like US subpoenas and things of that nature. And so you can be assured that your data is actually secure And that is not something that is new. It is not something that just came to the forefront after the overturning of Roe. It was something that was a part of the integral, like, foundation of Clue, because that was always a value. Also, Clue is science-backed. And what science-backed really means is that there isn't a desire to sensationalize things. It is a desire to educate the users. And so that education comes from scientists. It comes from research articles. It comes from actual research studies. And Clue allows you to opt in to use your de-identified data to actually fill the research gap. And that might be my favorite part. And not even might. It is my favorite part, because there's such a major research gap as relates to menstruation and what menstruation looks like in a variety of communities that haven't been historically valued as ones worth studying or worth tracking. But Clue, because it is a global app that can be used by anyone, is really making ways to fill that research gap. The other thing is just product excellence. And a very simple interface. Like, simplicity is key. And I use Clue. I love it. It's like, hey, girl, you want to track something? I'm like, sure. And it doesn't feel crazy. It doesn't feel inappropriate. And you get to pick exactly what profile you want. So, for example, Clue has a non-bleeding tracking profile, which I use because my IUD prevents me from having a period, which is celebrated, which I love. But I'm able to still track how my feelings are and how my ovaries are affecting me. Just because I don't have bleeding doesn't mean I'm not having a cycle. I am. And I still want to track that information. I'm not trying to conceive. And so my app isn't going to say, the Clue app isn't going to say, hey, you're ovulating, go have sex, you know, like some of the apps that kind of assume that conception is the goal. And then there's just a very ethical brand stance as it relates to, again, data privacy, but also just showing up for marginalized folks and for people that have been forgotten in the reproductive health space. So I think Clue is unlike any other app, but those are some of the examples of why they are different.
Hi, friends. Would you like to have the most epic eating experience? I'm talking eradicate bloating and better absorb your nutrients. If so, you need digestive enzymes. These are one of my most favorite supplements out of everything I take, and I truly cannot imagine my life without them. Digestive enzymes are key to break down your food into usable nutrition and to stop things like bloating, digestive distress, constipation, all the things. That's why I created Avalon X Digest. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at avalonx.us. You can also get a subscription and save 15%, which you can pause or cancel at any time. Friends, I worked so hard to create the perfect blend of enzymes for Avalon X Digest. It's a full-spectrum, plant-based enzyme blend with proteases to help you break down protein, amylase for carbs, lipase for fats, cellulase for fiber, and so much more. In fact, there are 13 different types of enzymes in this blend. I cannot tell you how many people have told me that when they take Avalon X Digest, they experience no digestive distress with meals. These are truly game changers. And for any of you guys looking to up your protein intake, Avalon X Digest will help you actually break down and assimilate your protein so you get more protein from your meals. I wanted to create the highest potency enzymes so that you get all of these benefits when you eat with no problematic fillers or ingredients. Avalon X Digest is also tested multiple times for purity and potency, comes in glass bottles, and is truly the best enzymes on the market. And again, you can get 10% off with the coupon code MelanieAvalon at avalonx.us.
I love that you led with the data privacy part, because I actually got a lot of questions about that. Like Marissa said, what are they doing with our data? Karen said, and this was interesting, she said there are concerns of governments using app information to, quote, check if someone had a pregnancy that did not result in a live baby and prosecute for them. One suggested tactic that people are doing to fight this is to try to add enough fake info into the apps, like from men using them, to try and distract them and make it harder. I'm not sure if that would actually work, though. I do think it's hard for USA-based apps to deny sharing data with government. So you just clarified that Clue is not based in the U.S. You said Berlin.
Berlin. Mm-hmm. And they're protected by the EU. It's like GDPR standard of data privacy, which is much higher than even the standards in the US.
Wow. Okay. Do you know does Clue experience that, where people are like doing fake data to try to?
So I think Clue doesn't experience that as much, possibly because you have to pay for Clue. There's a subscription rate, right? And so that means that no one's just going to log on for free and do reckless things. And I think that one holds a greater standard. And some people are like, well, why do I have to pay to use Clute? Because they're not selling your data to the highest bidder, which is why you can pay, you know, a very nominal kind of annual fee to have high quality product, you know, to have a really high quality product.
Wow, this is great. Okay. I feel so good about this conversation. And on the science piece, so I was thinking about this actually this week, because on the Intermittent Fasting podcast, my other show, we always open by discussing a recent like clinical article in like a journal or something like that. And sometimes we will look at the actual article and then we'll look at how it's portrayed in the news. And it's wild. Like, well, A, it's wild what headlines you can pull. Like, you can pull positive or negative headlines from any study, really. And even the abstract, oftentimes the abstract, for in my opinion, doesn't even properly capture, like, the abstract is where I feel like bias can come in and they can kind of like highlight what they want to highlight from the findings. I'm curious, because you're talking about how this is very science-backed and all the things, how does Clue approach interpreting the science like as objectively as possible? Is there a filter or paradigm that they're approaching science from? Like, how do they interpret the science?
So I think the science department at Clue, and I work closely with them, they have the highest standards for what is put out for our users, what is published, what we stand behind and what we don't. And what that looks like is people that are used to interpreting science articles and those who don't get swayed by sensationalized headlines in our more like, you know, general publications. So there's multiple reviews of even press releases and publications from the science team, from myself. And so there's many eyes that are not just looking to see if this kind of tracks or pushes out the storyline or headline that is most beneficial to us, but one that is actually scientifically accurate. And so that standard is something that, I mean, obviously we just learn when you are being taught how to review research articles. Like, what does this actually mean? But what is the clinical significance? What does this mean for actual users? Is this a moderate increase? One of my favorite books that I have read, it's like my favorite, was once it's called like How to Lie with Statistics.
Oh, that sounds interesting. I like that.
It's super, super old. It's a book, and obviously it's written kind of facetiously, but the idea is that you must be critical of any statistic that is ever presented to you. You can say, oh, you're twice as likely to die if you walk over here. Well, is that risk 0.1% and then it goes to 0.2? Is that significant? What does that actually mean? And so as we, especially as a physician who is constantly taking statistics and translating that to patients who do not have that clinical background, being able to do so appropriately and ethically and accurately is what I live to do. So having multiple people that have accountability that isn't just to an agency or just to a company, but to their own like ethical standards as scientists and people that live by that and don't find that as a burden, but as a joy, that's how you can have a higher science standard for what you're pushing out to your users.
So actually, speaking of statistics, and I love that title of that book, I'm curious, do you know if Clue has found, with all of the data collection that it has done, things that don't match the common statistics, like what we commonly think, just as far as like have there been any epiphanies that they've had from the data that were unexpected or surprising based on all the user data?
Not exceptionally, but one of my favorite findings that was from a Clue study was one that just showed that cycle syncing just isn't a thing, as in syncing with your friends, like your bestie or like your roommate. And of course, people, they push back on that all the time, but it was one that you can actually easily do because the app is tracking it, right? So because of all the data in the app, I mean, they had millions of cycles that they could track and there was no sign or any meaningful support of syncing. And of course, that's one of all the myths that exist around like periods. That's like one of the most benign. So it's not one that I go toe to toe with, you know, I'm like, okay, if that's what you want to believe, that's fine. But it was super interesting because Clue had so much data, they could actually show it and say, hey, this isn't a thing. So that's one of the things that's been like a larger study that was done, but nothing that has been profoundly like paradigm shifting as relates to what's been found. What I do think, because Clue track such granular data, you can look at different patterns and things, but a lot of the insights that are most profound are going to be on the individual basis. It's going to be on an individual's ability to notice patterns in themselves because there's so much information that's being tracked. But Clue is doing some interesting studies. There's a study that they're working with related to type 1 diabetes and how insulin sensitivity changes throughout the cycle. That's not something that's new, because there's science that shows that insulin sensitivity actually decreases in the luteal phase. I had a patient with type 1 diabetes, and I was just talking like, hey, girl, we've got periods now, and there's going to be some changes. Have you noticed difficulty managing your blood sugars during any time? She was like, right before my period starts. It's like, you little smarty. Yes. There's science that shows that you are less sensitive to insulin during that time, so you have to increase that. And I'm sorry, but that's just what it looks like now that you're having periods. And so it's interesting to see these things, but we can get greater insights to build upon the knowledge that we already have. So it's more of bringing that knowledge further or taking it further and filling in gaps, as opposed to laying entire new groundwork on menstrual health.
I'm wondering, okay, so a topic I would really want to research, especially with this being the biohacking podcast, well, a few different things. I'd have to like formulate my thesis here, but a fascinating fact that I think a lot of people don't know is that I believe the ovaries age the fastest of any organ in our body. Have you heard that?
I would say so in a sense. That would make sense if you define aging by like actual function and when that function ends.
I've interviewed a few different people who have talked about the role of ovaries and studying the ovaries in the science of longevity because of how they age. I'm really curious, are they looking at all on cycles and longevity in people?
I don't know if there is something specific that is being targeted as relates to longevity, so to speak, because longevity is kind of one of those blanket terms that means like a lot of things, obviously length of life, right? But quality of life. And so that would be some markers and subjectivity that I don't know that they're tracking, but there's a lot of information that's being tracked as relates to like perimenopause, with an idea that once people head into menopause, cycle tracking tends to fall off. So I don't know if there's any work to keep those folks who are beyond the time of having more regular cycles or have entered into menopause on the app for the purpose of longevity information. I do think it would be a disservice to stop gathering information once the person has gone that full year without a period and is truly menopausal, because that wouldn't tell us enough about longevity. I hope that makes sense.
You know, it does. It totally does. And yeah, one of the questions I ask a lot of people on this show, actually, and it's because for a few different reasons. One, I'm fascinated by longevity. Two, I don't personally think I want to have kids. So three, I'm really curious the correlation between having kids and longevity. Because like, I just think about it in a kind of esoteric way, but I think like if from an evolutionary perspective, our bodies are, you know, set up for reproduction. So like everything is to like reproduce, then by not having kids, does your body like, prolong things? Cause it's like waiting for you to have kids still, or I don't know. I would love to see more science, more studies on the science of having kids and longevity. And then there's a whole like role of like actually having the kids and how that affects things.
I mean, yeah. So they're just generally speaking, most studies show that people who have children do live longer. I think it's like some not so long amount, like 1 or 2 years, like 6 months to 12 months or something like that. And it's unclear as to why exactly. It's possible that maybe the kids harass them about health, or I don't know, or that maybe having kids is a surrogate marker of healthiness. And even in mothers who have kids older live longer.
Right. Like if you can have it older, then it makes sense that your body is on that track of living longer.
Yeah. Those are some of the things I understand. The difficulty of longevity and life length and those sorts of things is because... This sounds very morbid, but because Clue relies on what the user tracks, no one's tracking their death.
Right. Exactly. I know. I was literally thinking that when I was asking the question. I was like,
so it's like, oh, I can't log to that this month. I actually departed. So, you know, I do think longevity is something that is really, really important and super valuable to discuss as it relates to a variety of populations. But I do think it's important to bring up the disparities as relates to health and life expectancy at baseline. There was a study that came out in JAMA recently that talked about how race and racism obviously affects mortality, and how Black and brown people, especially Black people in the United States, have much shorter life expectancy that correlates to levels of inflammation. And so when I think about longevity, especially as a Black woman, it's something that kind of causes me a little bit of pain, because when I think about the people in my family, longevity is like the other side of our goal. Like, we just want to live, you know, the regular life expectancy. So longevity on that side of quality and on all of those things, you know, that's a beautiful marker, but we're trying to get, you know, to the standard benchmark.
No, I mean, that comes up in a majority of the books I read on health and wellness, is like the socioeconomic status and race and everything, and how it, you know, just the major influence it has on health conditions. And it's a really, really big problem. So I was going to say, okay, so people who are using, because I just so appreciate your perspective here and empowering people to view their cycle the way it best benefits their life and using the app for their goals. And I love what you were saying about how, you know, some apps just assume like, oh, it assumes that you want to get pregnant by tracking. That's like what we're just assuming you're here for. Yeah. To that point, I'm super, super curious. So regardless of somebody's goals, so if they want to get pregnant, maybe they don't want to get pregnant. Either way, getting pregnant or not getting pregnant, it is important to know when you're ovulating. So how effective is using tracking and with an app, like using the tracking with Clue, using that as your main tool for timing of getting pregnant or not getting pregnant?
So Clue is specifically not meant to be like a birth control option, right? So I think Natural Cycles, it's the one you mentioned, there are apps out there that are intended to be used as a form of birth control and have FDA approval as that, and Clue is not one of those. Now, there is Clue Conceive Mode, which is the clinically validated algorithm, and its efficacy has been demonstrated in clinical research studies. The efficacy of it outside of clinical research studies is, again, harder to glean because most people don't go back to their period app and say, I got pregnant. They just stopped tracking. And so it's certainly variable. It varies depending on the age of the tracker, which group you're looking at, how intentional someone is tracking. So I can't give you direct, I guess, percentages or numbers related to that. But just for your purposes, in a general sense, when we're looking at birth control on a graph, so to speak, and we're labeling like the ones that are the most effective and the least effective, the tracking of your cycles is always going to be in the least effective category, along with like the pullout methods, spermicides, and male and female condoms. So, yeah. So it's always going to be like, I would say 70 to 80% is.
I actually didn't know that there were apps that were approved, like FDA approved as birth control. I did not realize that. And then, so here's a question from Teresa. She wants, and you mentioned earlier, like the different life phases. She said, what is it like when you are in perimenopause? She says, my Oura Ring in perimenopause will sometimes give me minor symptoms and my temperature will be up slightly. Is ovulation moving later? I read we have frequent cycles without ovulation. What does that look like? And how can we even tell? How does ovulation change from age 40 to 50? So ovulation changing throughout like our life cycles, does it move around?
Absolutely. So ovulation and even cycle length can start to change as early as in your 30s, because our like peak time of fertility is technically like around 27, which is so disturbing when you think about it. But it's just the exponential drop off in the amount of eggs that we produce, and then kind of the aging of the ovaries that starts to manifest as early as in our 30s. Perimenopause is a time that obviously precedes menopause, and it can be up to 10 years of time. And so the early phases of perimenopause, we typically see that you're missing like 1 to 2 periods in a year. And then in later perimenopause, that can be like 5 to 6 periods in a year. And so when you're missing these periods, that's typically meaning that there's going to be an ovulation, or you're not actually ovulating regularly. When ovulation occurs, so when your ovary releases an egg, you have two outcomes. It is pregnancy or a period. There is no in between. And so when we go without a period for a prolonged period of time, not to use that word unnecessarily, and you are not pregnant, that typically signals that ovulation did not occur. And that's just because of the way our hormones respond. Once an egg is released, progesterone increases, then it decreases, and that is what triggers the lining to shed. And so if that increase and decrease doesn't happen, it's typically because ovulation didn't happen. And so, yes, it can be very challenging to track ovulation as you get into your perimenopausal time period. And certainly as you get into your 50s, that ovulation is going to be even more erratic and difficult to track. However, there is research that shows that someone spontaneously conceived in the literature at the age of 56. So if you are still having a period, if you have not gone a full 12 months without a period, then you really need to consider that you're still able to have a pregnancy. And so some sort of contraceptive practice or method needs to be in place. So while we can't necessarily identify exactly when ovulation occurs, there's tests that can be done, especially in research settings. There's typically like a progesterone test that would show that the progesterone increased to a certain amount, which is good enough to signal that ovulation occurred. But no one's going to do that on a regular basis just for funsies. And certainly a period tracking app is not sufficient. But yes, we expect changes to ovulation, and that is most often manifested in like a tangible and physical way by the periods becoming less frequent.
Hi, friends. I am so excited to tell you about something that I am obsessed with that can revolutionize your health, help with stress levels, support longevity, and really help you when you go out and are having a bit of wine or drinks or all the things. And I'm going to tell you how to get $100 off. So I've been talking about the role of NAD in our health for so long. NAD stands for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. It is a coenzyme that is involved in so many processes in our body, including energy production and DNA repair. And it is depleted by things like stress, aging, lack of sleep, alcohol, and of course, too much partying. In fact, a lot of researchers believe that declining NAD levels is one of the key factors in aging. That's why I have been really interested in boosting and supporting NAD levels, and I have tried all the things. You can take precursors to NAD called NR and NMN. I still take NMN. However, I am much more alert by directly giving your body NAD. And historically, the most common way to do that is accessible to people was through NAD IVs and NAD shots. I actually never did an NAD IV for a few reasons. One, they are extraordinarily expensive. Two, I've been doing the shots, which I liked because they were easy to do. That said, they always made me feel a little bit unwell right afterwards. And I've heard that the IV makes a lot of people feel unwell. So if the shots were making me feel unwell and that was going into the muscle first as like a barrier, I can't even imagine what putting it straight into my bloodstream would have done. Plus with the IVs, you have to sit there for potentially hours. So basically IVs were a no-go for me. So like I said, I was doing the shots, but I was like, I wish there was an easier way to do this. Then a company called Ion Layer reached out to me. Oh my goodness, friends, I am so obsessed. So they make transdermal NAD patches, and they have studies showing that these patches actually boost your NAD levels. And what's so amazing is you put on a patch. It's super easy to put on. I have a video on my Instagram about how you do it. You basically get this patch thing with like a negative side and a positive side. You put saline on one side, you mix up the NAD with some sterile water and the NAD that they give you on the other side, then you stick it to your arm or wherever you want to put it. You put a super cool black patch over it, kind of like how you put the patches over CGMs. And then what's amazing is there are no side effects. You don't feel unwell from it, and it lasts for 14 hours. And it's so easy. You can do it at home, and then you can really decide when you want to do it. So with the shots, I was doing them once a week, and I was trying to do them before going out. With this patch, now I put on the patch before going out, and it makes me feel so good. It really helps the next day from any alcohol recovery that you may need. And they look pretty awesome with my outfits, not gonna lie. I am obsessed with these patches. I just want everybody to know about them, and they are so much more affordable than the shots or the IVs. If you want to boost your NAD levels, support anti-aging, help with your stress, help with lack of sleep, and or optimize your partying, you need these patches, friends. And I'm so excited because working with the company has been amazing, and they are giving you guys $100 off, which is incredible. So to get that discount, just go to melanieavalon.com/ionlayer. That's Ionlayer, and use the coupon code Melanie Avalon to get $100 off your first order. I cannot recommend these enough. I'm going to use them for the unforeseeable future, probably for the rest of my life. It's literally just become part of my arsenal now. Like when I'm getting ready to go out, usually once a week, put on my NAD patch. And even if I don't go out that week, I still like to do one once weekly. Oh, P.S. They're also amazing for traveling. You guys know I'm not a big traveler. I've been doing more traveling recently. and I wear these on the plane there and back. Game changer. Although it's really fun at TSA, especially because I already opt out and don't go through the scanner thing. So they already are suspicious. And then they're like, what's that on your arm? And I'm like, it's NAD. And then they're like, what's that? And then I'm like, it's a coenzyme in your body that's involved in a lot of metabolic processes and energy production and DNA repair. And then they just look at me really weird, but it's fine. It's totally fine. So again, that's melanieavalon.com/ionlayer to get $100 off your ion layer kit. It comes with 6 patches, totally the way to go for boosting NAD levels, and I cannot recommend it enough. MelanieAvalon.com/ionlayer with the coupon code MelanieAvalon for $100 off.
And speaking of ovulation, so now I'm just thinking about all of it. I'm really interested in like freezing your eggs and things like that. And something I think about with that is, would a person's cycle at all be an indicator of their egg quality? Or like, is there a connection between the eggs that you're producing and then how your cycle manifests?
So in theory, yes. I mean, in theory. So if you are not having a regular monthly cycle, one would expect that you are not going to be ovulating regularly. And so those eggs are not as accessible, or they're not available or as accessible for conception. But the actual quality of the eggs, like how good those eggs are, that is not reliably correlated to the characteristics of your period itself.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
So I froze my eggs.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yes. When I was 34, I froze them just because I told myself in residency that if I was 34 and wasn't married, I would freeze my eggs. At that time, when I started the egg freezing process, or when I decided to start it, I wasn't engaged. I got engaged in January and started the egg freezing in February. I was like, well, I said I was going to do it, so I'm still going to do it. And it was very straightforward. I really enjoyed the process, and I just felt really empowered to be able to freeze my eggs. I love that science allows for that, and it just made me feel less stressed. I felt less stressed with my husband, like, hey, we don't have to enter our marriage with this weird clock behind us telling us when to start our family. And I felt really empowered making that decision.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that. Yeah, I'm very intrigued by it. I'm like around the time that I probably would be doing it. So yeah, that's okay. So, so interesting. You mentioned earlier, we were talking about surprising findings, and you were talking about the cycle syncing myth with your friends. What are some of the myths that you see very commonly that make you cringe, especially with like social media?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. I think the ones that are so cringy now are related to all of the weird concoctions and recipes that people say will stop your period or shorten it.
Okay, I haven't seen that. Clearly my algorithm is not set up for this.
Your algorithm is protected. Now, you know what? People tag me in them. They're like, the period doctor, what do you think? And so then I get to see all of them. So I remember a few summers ago, it was like Jell-O and lemonade or lime juice or something and salt. This one that I saw more recently was cayenne pepper and cinnamon. And it's just like, people are just making things up. But when patients come in and ask me about those, I say, well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about physiology. These are the signals that your body uses to tell you when you're going to have a period. Now you tell me, how does cayenne pepper change the signaling? No, go. I'm like, can you think of any way? I'm like, no, I can't. What about Jell-O? And they're like, I can't. You know, so those are difficult. I think the other ones that are really harmful, like the more harmful myths and misconceptions out there are around like hormonal therapy, which is what I tend to call birth control, especially when I'm using it for non-contraceptive reasons, which are many. So for my youngest patients, you know, the youngest patients I personally diagnosed with endometriosis was 12. And endometriosis, yeah, is managed primarily by hormonal therapy. And that's because endometriosis worsens when there's fluctuations of your hormones that are like your unaltered normal hormonal fluctuations for someone with endometriosis causes this chronic disease to progress and worsen. So we manage that by applying hormonal therapy or administering hormonal therapy that minimizes those fluctuations. But because social media said that birth control causes infertility, I may have a patient with endometriosis who says, I actually don't want to treat it with what you have because I'm worried about infertility. All the while, Endometriosis causes infertility, especially if it's untreated. And that's not theoretical. That's not pretend. That's real. And so it's really challenging when the misconceptions are so pervasive that the patients who need things the most cannot feel empowered to utilize those things because the noise of misconceptions are so loud.
Wow. And so when you're saying hormone replacement therapy, birth control, is it birth control or is it like estrogen, progesterone?
Yeah. So hormone therapy, hormone replacement therapy.
Okay. That's probably my bad.
That's okay. So I call it hormone therapy because we're using hormonal methods to improve or treat their symptoms and conditions. It is the same, or it falls within the category of hormonal contraception. Some of them do, some of them do not.
Okay. Gotcha. Again, flashbacks. I'm thinking about how I actually was on birth control, irony aside of being in a religious upbringing school, but I had to go on birth control to get Accutane in high school. And it was like a traumatic thing for me because I was so excited to get the Accutane, and you had to go through this whole like program and like be on birth control for a little bit and then like take these quizzes. And then my dermatologist, the initial dermatologist who was prescribing it, I had to be on birth control for like a month or something. And then I came in, she was like, oh, I think the birth control's working enough, so we're just going to keep you on birth control and I won't prescribe Accutane. And I was like crying. But
it did help, I assume.
It did. I just look back and like I've interviewed like Abby Epstein and Ricky Lake for their documentary, The Business of Birth Control. They have quite a few business of like movies and documentaries and books, but I'm really intrigued by, and so that's why I really like appreciate this conversation, because like with the endometriosis, like that could really help that situation. And yet I think about like my situation where it's like, I don't think I needed to be on birth control for acne. Like I just look back and I'm like, I would not put my child on birth control for acne, but that's just my personal like perspective. So it's a nuance. Like, I'm curious your thoughts on like the nuances of it.
Yeah, it's very nuanced. And I think even just that statement, right? Like I wouldn't have wanted to put my child on birth control for just acne. But Accutane is actually like a teratogenic medication. It's actually really strong. It has major side effects. We have a very strong bias for how we view birth control. Like birth control is still medicine. Birth control is just progesterone and estrogen, which is what your body already makes. And it doesn't have this crazy harm against if there was a fetus, that it wouldn't terribly and, you know, permanently damage it. So even just that statement suggests that we're kind of conditioned to accept the side effects and risk of other medicines. But when it becomes birth control, it's unacceptable. It's inappropriate and it's wrong. And I do think a lot of that is because of patriarchy and just the way society has taught us to look at medicines that we use for the female body. A lot of people are like, well, birth control doesn't cure anything. Well, neither does my blood pressure medicine. Neither does insulin, right? Neither does the majority of SSRIs, or none of those things cure things, but you've decided it's appropriate. And so deciding for adolescents who are in debilitating pain that it is appropriate for them to be in pain is just wrong. Or deciding for the adolescent whose acne actually is significantly impairing their self-esteem and their social life that it's inappropriate to be on birth control is wrong.
No, I'm so glad you said that. And because I kind of stopped myself short and I would have extended it to say, I have a different view now of both the birth control and the Accutane, which I agree, like the site, like the Accutane, that is, it's an intense drug.
It is so intense. And we were just doing it 12 years old. I was like, oh my God.
It's so intense. Like, and it has so many problems associated with it. And then at the same time, like you said, like I went on it and like for me, it changed my life for the better. Like I went from like loathing my skin, like it being such a negative thing in my life, to it just went away, which was like the most freeing thing. And so I guess we make everything so like black and white, and like we put morality into it. And I just think we need more education and information about everything so people can make the best choices. But then with like kids, it's the parents who are, you know, leading that for them. So thank you again for your book.
Nuance. And I love this because it stretches me. It makes me want to be better. And just the fact that we are talking about what longevity looks like, and we want to redefine what aging looks like, but we are so archaic in our beliefs of what adolescence should look like, that acne is just, you know, par for the course and it's a birthright, or it's just an expected thing. But for some people, that's really, really traumatic for them. For some people, their pain is really, really awful from their very first period. And so I want the nuance that we're bringing to aging, to menopause, to how women show up, to extend to our youngest folks, because they are free and real people who are deserving and worthy of a good quality of life, like the same quality of life that makes us human, that makes us want to feel fulfilled. It should not be minimized just because they're younger.
Now with social media, and we've talked about all these myths that get perpetuated on social media. And at the same time, it does open the dialogue because now it is talked about more. So how do you feel about like the pros and cons of the social media situation? Like if you could like flip a magic wand. I mean, well, obviously you're like an influencer on social media, like spreading all this education. Do you feel like it's like going to battle every day, or is it like a good, like, how do you feel?
So some days I do feel like I'm going to battle, and I feel like I'm going to battle with a slingshot and a prayer, and people have like, you know, all sorts of things. So I love social media. I love social media because it gives people who historically did not have a voice a voice. I think social media and just the nature of communities that can be built online allow for people who have been marginalized and forgotten and been decentered to finally feel centered. Everyone can find their people online. The problem is that voices that may not have the best intentions, voices that have major biases without meaningfully disclosing those, voices that have political agendas and things that are actually harmful for the health and wellness of the folks listening, those are also amplified too. And the nature of the algorithms that are out there elevate things that are sensationalized, that cause really, really strong emotional responses. And many of my educational videos are not going to really be able to fight against something that says all of your doctors are lying to you, you know, or birth control kills you or whatever. And so it does feel difficult. But what I know is the alternative is a world in which people are not able to speak up, people are not able to share their stories, voices are not able to be heard, and communities are not able to be created where people feel seen and validated and where they can build trust. And so I remember the days where I just spoke to patients in my office every 15 to 30 minutes, every day, back to back to back, and I was not reaching millions of people like I reach today. So I have to acknowledge the beauty and the incredible impact that is possible with social media, while also acknowledging the potential harm. And so I think that there need to be limitations on social media. There need to be, you know, guardrails and safety opportunities, especially for younger kids. But I would not want to be in a world where social media did not exist, where people like myself, who otherwise would just be stuck in a clinic saying the same thing over and over again, can make one video and reach millions. Like, that's kind of really amazing. And I can impact the lives of people that don't necessarily, that can't come to my office or don't have the resources to travel or don't have insurance or whatever that would be necessary to be seen. They can still benefit from the work.
I feel that's basically that's how I feel about all of it as well. Because my mom's always like, Melanie, you should be, well, I and doctors are absolutely, absolutely incredible. I appreciate that I can like create content and, you know, reach so many people. Also, you are a doctor. I don't have the liability that comes along with being a doctor. So that's nice. With writing your book, what was the most challenging aspect of it?
I think the most challenging aspect was carrying throughout every chapter the grace and consideration necessary to be able to disarm the reader without offending or polarizing them. We live in a world that is so extreme and so polarizing, and it hurts my heart, especially because there is not much truly controversial about periods, like at baseline, right? Like, it happens, it's physiological, like whatever you believe, it happens, right? So it is so hard to have to wade through the foolishness that happens when you pile politicalization and hypersexualization and adultification, all of these things that make periods and puberty feel heavy. And so while that is difficult to navigate, I have to always hold space for what people carry individually and make sure that if I am creating an environment in which I expect and hope that people are truly going to learn, above all, I have to make them feel safe. And safety requires that I can't leave with extreme thoughts or you know, blanket statements or gross generalizations. I have to leave room. And so everything I wrote, I was like, who's forgotten here? Who'd be offended here? What does the opposition look like? And trying to be as thoughtful as possible, because I want my book to not just reach people who think like me. I want my book to reach everyone. I want my book to reach anyone who can benefit from medical accuracy and compassion in the puberty and period space. And I had someone say, you know what, I don't have any kids, but I feel like I'm going to read your book to heal the girl inside of me, the little girl inside. I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that. I was like, I got to go reread it for the little girl inside, the adult, you know. So I think that was the hardest part. There's a lot of responsibility to writing. There's an immortalization of your words. And it doesn't feel like a tweet. It doesn't feel like a 60-second reel. It feels like something that is tangible that will outlive me. And I just wanted to give it the grace and thoughtfulness that it deserved.
I can understand, especially because, you know, like the way I opened the show was talking about all of this shame and stigma and just like tiptoeing. It's like the most tiptoeing subject. And so I can totally see how writing that and making sure that you're seeing everybody and everybody feels included or is included, how that would be really challenging. And I know for me, because I talk pretty openly on this show about all of these topics. And I think it's because I had such a, like I said, from the way I was raised and then the epiphanies I had about how I realized how biased it was. And I've just made it a mission to like talk about this very openly. And my audience in general is extremely kind and empathetic and open-minded. And I rarely get like negative feedback. I will say if I do get like somebody directly emailing me, it's usually because of talking so openly about like sexual health and wellness and things like that. So it's definitely still, you know, very something to be navigating. On that note, so Clue is being so kind. They are actually, speaking of fabulous listeners, they're actually giving listeners a code for 12 months free. So like Charis was saying, this app has a paywall, which is incredible because it supports data privacy and they are not selling your data to people. So you can feel very comfortable and confident that when you're having Clue and using Clue, that your data is safe and, you know, not being used in a negative way that you would not like. And so it is a paid app. And that said, you can get it a year free, which is amazing. So you can use the coupon code Melanie Avalon. You do need to log in for that to work. So we will put a link in the show notes that will directly help you log in and apply the code. If not, you can go to helloclue.com/login and then use the coupon code Melanie Avalon to get 12 months free. So thank you to the Clue. Thank you, Clue, for giving our audience that. Okay, this has been so amazing. Was there anything that you wanted to touch on or share with listeners before? Oh, and tell the name of your book again so listeners can either pre-order it or order it.
Yes, it's available for pre-order at all of the major retailers. It is called The Period and Puberty Parenting Revolution, and it will be truly released on May 19th of 2026.
Amazing. I'm so excited. I cannot wait to read it. Would love to have you back after I've actually read it so I can like dive even deeper. Was there anything else that you want to share with listeners? Anything that you wanted to clarify or, you know, put out there and then how people can best follow your work?
Sure. So the only thing I will clarify, and I would just add this to how Clue is different. And this is something that I noticed when I was like actually signing up for Clue. When you log into Clue and it gives you like the little terms and conditions that most people just scroll through and you're like, yeah, it has the most straightforward, easy to understand terms and conditions where you can opt into every single thing. I can opt into my de-identified data being used as for research studies. I can say, I don't want that. And I just, in all of the things, even like, you know, something as simple as like a streaming service. I was like, I can actually read and understand this. And the reason is their job and their goal is not to dupe you. It is not to trick you into opting into something. It is a model of true informed consent, which is what I like to carry into my appointments with my patients. And so when I have a patient that comes in and says, I didn't take that medicine because I didn't understand it, I say, I'm so happy you didn't. I never want you to take anything you don't understand. So let's talk more about it so you can feel good about it. And I love that because Clue models that same thing. It is not trying to trick you into just signing away all of your rights, right? It is trying to say, how can we protect you best? And even though we think it's great to use your de-identified data to fill research gaps, we want to make sure that you feel good about it. do you truly? You know, and I just think that that is something that is a rarity in this day and age. It's just a rarity to feel considered and to feel protected in that way. And I just love the idea of being a part of something that is continuing to consider and protect people in a world that doesn't do so all that much. Yeah, I just wanted to add that.
That's amazing. Out of all the brands I work with, I have one brand where their contracts, they write them. It's still legal, but it's written so you can actually like understand it. And I'm like, this is so refreshing. Like, and it really shows, like you said, that they're not hiding anything. Like they really care about that you have agency and how your data is being used and what you're agreeing to. So I love that. Love that. And then, okay, the last question that I ask every single guest on this show, and it's just because I realize more and more each day the importance of mindset. So what is something that you're grateful for?
Oh my goodness. I'm so grateful for health. And I think health looks a lot of different ways for people. But as someone who was diagnosed with a chronic illness at a really young age, almost 10 years ago, to live the life I live and to be able to have had a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby, I don't take it for granted, not one day.
I love that so much. Well, thank you, Charis. This has been absolutely amazing. We will put links to everything in the show notes. Again, listeners, go get the Clue app now. Decide what you're opting into. Use the code Melanie Avalon to get 12 months free of that. And congrats in advance on your book. And this has just been so wonderful. Thank you for everything you're doing. It's really, truly stunning. Thank you.
You are excellent. You are probably one of my favorite podcast hosts I've ever talked to ever. And I've done a lot. I think it's just your authenticity and just the way you ask questions, it feels so comfortable and calming. And so I pride myself on creating safety and comfort. But I think you do quite well in your podcast space doing the same thing. So tell your mom you're actually doing exactly what doctors do, or the good ones at least.
You're the best. Well, enjoy. This is so wonderful. Enjoy the rest of your day and hopefully see you soon.
Thank you so much. You too.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to the Melanie Avalon Biohacking Podcast. For more information and resources, you can check out my book, What, When, Wine, as well as my supplement line, Avalon X. Please visit melanieavalon.com to learn more about today's guest, and always feel free to contact me at contact@melanieavalon.com. And always remember, you got this.